ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय क्वचित् Just as a monkey jumps from one tree to another, the conditioned soul jumps from one body to another. As the monkey is ultimately captured by the hunter and is unable to get out of captivity, the conditioned soul, being captivated by momentary sex pleasure, becomes attached to different types of bodies and is engaged in family life. Family life affords the conditioned soul a festival of momentary sex pleasure, and thus he is completely unable to get out of the material clutches. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.9.29, Vishaya Kalu Sarvata Syat. Bodily necessities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, are all very easily available in any form of life. It is stated here that the vanara, monkey, is very much attracted to sex. Each monkey keeps at least 24 wives, and he jumps from one tree to another to capture the female monkeys. Thus, he immediately engages in sexual intercourse. In this way, the monkey's business is to jump from one tree to another and enjoy with his wives. The conditioned soul is doing the same thing, transmigrating from one body to another and engaging in sex. He thus completely forgets how to become free from the clutches of material engagement. Sometimes the monkey is captured by a hunter who sells its body to doctors so that its glands can be removed for the benefit of another monkey. All this is going on in the name of economic development and improved sex life. Srila Sukadev Goswami manifested the qualities of one who is above the modes of material nature. Therefore, he is able to see everything clearly. To the extent the conditioned soul is covered by the false ego, and affected by the three modes of nature, sattva-guna, rajaguna, tamoguna, that person's perception of reality is tinged. The Vedas explain One who sees through the eyes of the Acharya sees things as they are. Otherwise, if you have yellow-colored glasses, everything appears yellow. If you have green-colored glasses, everything is green, red. If you have black glasses, everything is black. So our consciousness is what the soul is seeing through. It is not a matter of seeing with eyes, because there are great saints who were blind, who are seeing what everyone wants to see. Bilva Mangala Thakur, he was seeing Krishna day and night in the beautiful forests of Vrindavan, manifesting his pastimes, although he had no eyes to see on the physical plane. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had severe cataracts in his eyes. Thakur Bhakti Vinod was trying to convince him, go to Calcutta, get your cataract operation, see things properly. I will not go to hell. Didn't care. And he went more or less toward the end of his days in this world, more or less he was becoming blind because he didn't care about these physical eyes. But he was seeing everything. He was seeing the material world as it is, and the spiritual world as it is. So seeing through the eyes is a very defective instrument, because really we're seeing through our consciousness. And our impressions that are coming through our senses is very much tainted and interpreted by our consciousness. So one who has a pure consciousness sees things as they are. Shukadev Goswami, that was his quality. He was in the womb of his mother for 12 years and had no concern with coming out because he was self-satisfied. He did not need the senses and their objects for happiness. He was feeling great bliss, just immersed in Krishna's Brahman existence. How wonderful. But when he heard Krishna's leelas, he was eager to come out to hear more. Param drisva nivartate, a higher taste. When he heard from his father, Srila Vyasadeva, he could see the whole world according to the knowledge he received with realization. So if we are to understand things as they are, we must hear from those persons whose consciousness is uncontaminated by the false ego. Thus, Srila Prabhupada very systematically and vigorously tried to crush our faith in mundane empiricists, those who are trying to explain this world and beyond by their imperfect sense perception and by their various theories and mental conceptions. Prabhupada wanted us to see through the eyes of the scriptures. What we read in Bhagavad Gita is the word of God, as God sees reality, the Creator, who is above the modes of nature, He's explaining not only how this material nature works, but why it works the way it does. And we accept. The descending process of knowledge is to be submissive and to accept. We may challenge at a certain level to understand deeper, but once we acknowledge our own defects and the authority from which this knowledge is descending, then we accept. That is the basic premise of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was a very learned person with acute ability to analyze things of this world. Karpanyo doso bahata svabhava. But he came to the conclusion that this world is too perplexing. It is too complicated. I cannot figure out how to get out of the dilemma. It wasn't simply the dilemma of the battle that was before him. It was the battlefield of life within material existence. Why is it all happening? How is it happening? How to deal with these very difficult questions? It seems whatever I do, I'm going to suffer. If I win and kill my relatives, I suffer. If I lose and everything is finished, I suffer. There's nothing except suffering before me. Better I suffer in nonviolence than violence. Very difficult. His mind was in turmoil. His senses were agitated as anything. Agitated with questions. What should I do? What should I not do? Yes, in this world, we are often put in situations beyond our free will that are very difficult to answer. What is the right thing? When things are going our way, it's very easy to find answers to your questions. But when things are very complicated, very perplexing, not according to our plan, very difficult. But the reality is, these things come upon everyone. There's no use blaming anyone. There's no use blaming the environment. There's no use blaming God. We simply have to understand that there is something for me to learn from this situation. And how do we learn? Not by our own intellect, but by hearing from authorities. We learn how to learn. Otherwise, it's not possible. Even disasters, even humiliations, even mistakes. What is it that I'm supposed to learn from this situation? The real knowledge that is the fruit, the gift, the benediction of every situation of life can only be seen through the eyes of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Otherwise, we simply react. And the human ego is such that whenever we react, we always think that we're right. We always are convinced that others are wrong, and I am right, and I am justified. But is that the truth? Even if, from a literal, mundane point of view, you are right, and you prove yourself, What have you gained? The only thing you've gained is the amount of time you've spent proving yourself. You've gained that much progress toward death and bondage. That's all. Is that a great gain? The world may say, oh, very good. Now I understand. Other people will not understand. You're the only one convinced. Everyone else just surrenders out of anxiety because they don't want to deal with it anymore. But what have you gained? Just all that precious human energy wasted toward death. Human life is not meant to prove ourselves. Human life is meant to please Krishna. Sam Siddhir Hari Doshanam. Therefore, we must learn not by the ascending process of figuring out, because according to God, it is eternally impossible. Whatever lesson we're meant to learn to bring us closer to truth must be through according to Krishna's interpretation, which is coming through the scriptures. And the scriptures must be understood according to the realizations of those who have pure hearts, those who are faithful to Sri Parampara. Then only do we understand as it is, and we make progress. Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the Paramhamsa Samhita because it is spoken by the topmost Paramhamsa, Shukadeva Goswami. The son of Vedavyas. And he's repeating perfectly. And he's giving the clear vision of what he sees. Of course, we know that Shukadeva Goswami, he went right to the forest on the day of his birth. Not an ordinary thing. Of course, his body had already grown 12 years the day of his birth. Most of us are forced out by these various gaseous pressures, or we're just cut out by a surgeon's knife when we're about 9 months of bodily forming. But Shukadeva Goswami, 12 years. And he just, when he heard Krishna Katha, Krishna was saying, come out. It's all right. Now's the time. He just came out by his own. It wasn't that he was pressed out and squished out. He just, by his free will, he came out and walked away. Just walked right into the forest. Nothing could stop him. His father had all nice plans for his future in life, but he just walked into the forest. No one could stop him. And he was seeing everything from the spiritual point of view. And then when he came back to his father to scrutinizingly learn the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, then he went back into the forest. People thought that he was a madman because he simply was not attached to the material conventions that bring us prestige, that make us appear normal to society, and through that cultural presentation of ourselves, we are hoping we will derive benefits of profit, adoration, distinction. He did not care for those things. He just, whatever was in his heart, he just did it. He wasn't thinking, what are people going to say? What are they going to do? What will be my future? Now, sometimes
insane people, mad people are like that.
They just don't care anything what anyone says, and they make all kinds of offenses and sinful activities. But Shukadeva Goswami was a genuine avadut. He was just doing whatever God was dictating to him within the heart, and it was for real. Amazing person. So he was living in a forest. And what we're reading today in this chapter is Shukadeva Goswami's clear, perfect vision of the world in comparison to a forest. Yes? He was learning such deep lessons about human civilization just by observing what's going on in the forest. Why? Because he was seeing God revealing truths to him. Amazing. In today's verse, he is teaching us the lesson of the monkeys. In the forests of India, so many monkeys. Actually, I remember even when I was on the spiritual path searching for higher truths, I lived in the forests of Himalayas, and for several days I studied the monkeys. And I was reading scriptures, but I can tell you, I learned more. I studied psychology during the one semester I was in college. And we were reading books by the top psychologists of the world. But I can tell you, one hour of watching the monkeys, I learned more about human psychology than I could from all these professors. Because it was just so plain and clear to see. How do monkeys live? They have no sophistication to cloak their hidden agendas or their motivations. Yes? They are not in any way expert at diplomacy. They're not diplomatic politicians. They're not saying one thing and doing another. Whatever you see is as it is. Very clear. It's very gross. I was fascinated. The mother, oh, how she protects with such affection her little babies. She'll die for her babies. She'll fight for her babies. That's totally on her mind, taking care of those little babies. And little babies, when they're very young, they're absolutely dependent on their mother. Mother is jumping from branch to branch, and the little baby's just holding on, holding on, holding, and she's jumping, holding on. And in the cities, monkeys are not living natural lives. We have seen. In the cities, even in the villages, monkeys, you don't really see them as they are. They're contaminated by association with human beings. But in the jungle, it's their natural inhabitants. And they really are very social people. They very much stick to their little sangam, their little society of monkeys. And they travel,
especially the white ones with black faces.
They're very, very family oriented and society oriented. And they just travel from place to place, the whole tribe together. And they'll stay wherever there's food. And as soon as the food runs out, they just all follow their leader and just jump from tree to tree to tree to tree. And the little children, oh, how they enjoy playing. The adults, they don't really look like they're enjoying the trees. They're just surviving. The females are just worrying about their little children, and the males, we'll get to that subject later. They're in a lot of anxiety about so many desires they have to be fulfilled, and especially their defending property. Even if they're only on a tree for a half hour, oh, they will defend their property. And any other male monkey comes close to them, we will discuss the subject matter. But the little children, they are just so innocent and so sweet. The little ones, they're just playing. They're just enjoying like anything. They have their new little arms and their new tails and their legs. And it's amazing. I mean, if human children could do what monkeys could do, they would be in bliss. They are really athletic. They just jump long distances and just grab onto a branch and grab onto a twig, and they're just twirling around and doing somersaults and just playing and playing and playing and enjoying like anything and making all kinds of noise. And when several of them come together, the little children monkeys, they're just jumping, and amazing acrobatic skills they have. They hang from their tails and they hang from their arms and their legs. They could just grab onto anything and just cling to it. And they're smiling, very much smiling. So yes, the children just play, and the adults are all struggling for survival.
Hare Krishna.
And the children, just like human children, they don't notice. They don't recognize the reality that I'm going to grow up and I'm going to have to be like that, struggling for survival. And the reason why the children are so blissful, this was my conclusion. I was about 19, 20 years old when I was studying the monkeys. It was my second semester of college. my second level of psychology research. The reason why the little children monkeys are so blissful is because they don't have sex desire yet. That's all there is to it. You see, when it comes upon them, they're always suffering. They're always in anxiety, because what comes along with that sex desire is so complicated. So much false ego. The little children monkeys, they have egos, but it's very simple type of false ego. It's not very complicated. But once that attraction for sex comes into the mind, it becomes very, very difficult for them. The male children monkeys are just playing together blissfully. But when they grow up, each one has their own agenda. And everyone else is a threat. And it's all based on
Pungshastriyu maituni bhavametam tayormito hridaya grantimahu.
As soon as that sex attraction awakens in the heart, a hard knot.
It's just tied within the heart.
Rishabhdev, he was also incarnation of Godhead. He explained this hard knot of attraction for sex is very, very difficult to break. It's the basic fundamental principle of material bondage. And through that hard knot of bondage, so much ego comes in. So many complications and so many attachments. Attachment to wife, or in the case of monkeys, in the plural, wives. Attachment to one's property. Attachment to one's facilities. Attachment to one's children. Attachment to one's prestige. In this way, one goes deeper and deeper and deeper into the illusion of I and mine. So yes, we were sitting on a rock in the Himalayan jungles, hours and hours watching the monkey tribes, following them around wherever they were going, deeper and deeper into the jungle. Fascinated by what I was learning, horrified by just seeing inside the human mind. Now, Charles Darwin claims that we are all descendants of monkey. And according to the scriptures, and according to proper logic, we understand that there are 8,400,000 species of life, and the species are not evolving from one another. The Supreme Lord has created all these species, and the spirit soul enters a particular species according to the karma of that soul. So, therefore, we reject the idea of at one time there were no humans, and somehow or other through the survival of the fittest and through various genetic progressive changes within the lower species, they gradually develop into higher species. That cannot be accepted because Krishna rejects it. However, from the point of view of the spirit of consciousness, what Charles Darwin is saying is very correct. That we are following in the footsteps of the monkeys. Our consciousness is like descendants of the monkeys. But opposite from Charles Darwin, in the age of Kali Yuga, as time progresses, we become more like monkeys. Yes? Instead of evolution, our consciousness is going through devolution toward the monkey species. The only difference is monkeys have beautiful, beautiful white fur. And we wear suits and ties. They don't comb their hair, we do. And saris, and jewels. Srila Prabhupada, he explains that the monkey is running on four legs, and you are running on four wheels, and you are thinking you have made so much progress. But what is the difference? The dog is running for sense gratification, and you are driving your car for sense gratification. The mentality is identical. The dog is sleeping on the street and you are sleeping on a nice bed. Is that advancement in civilization? Advancement in civilization is progress in consciousness, not the physical facilities. The purpose is the same, to sleep. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. The hog is eating garbage, and you're eating nice foods. The dogs and hogs, nayam deho deha bajam nulaike, they are having all kinds of sex relationships, having children, and we're doing the same thing. What is the difference? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It is animal life. But the degradation of society is when human beings feel that the more we make the process of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending sophisticated, the more we make it appear to be very decorated with customs and traditions, and decorated with technology, we think we're making progress. But Srila Prabhupada, Shukadeva Goswami, they're saying, no progress whatsoever. You're eating, sleeping, mating, defending, animal life, that's all. What is the difference between your consciousness and theirs? So yes, the little children, they're just playing and getting along so nicely, and even when they fight, it's not serious. When the little children monkeys fight, it's playful fight. Why? Because they have no sex desire. But then they start growing up, and those little, pretty little children, sweet, sweet little children, they become male monkeys. And the female monkeys, they're quite subordinate to the males, because the male is just a stronger species. Yes, if the female doesn't cooperate, the male has his physical power to exert, to discipline her. Hare Krishna. But I was watching, and I could see that actually the females were totally controlling the males. But the male ego is not willing to accept that reality. The male is thinking, I am the king of the jungle. You are my mate, and you will do whatever I say. Yes? And the female does it. Because if she doesn't, she might get beaten or bitten or something. But the fact is, the better she is at doing it, the more she totally obsesses and controls the male. This is human society, is it not? The men just don't get it. The male ego thinks that I'm predominating, but actually, they're being predominated. Why? Even though they have such strong, powerful arms, those monkeys, because they have attachment to sex desire. They're imperceptibly being controlled. And the male, in order to enjoy, because it's never enough, there's one wife, another wife, another wife, and he's traveling with his wives. And if another monkey comes and even looks in the direction of one of his wives. It's war. It's war. They're so protective. And in order to enjoy food, which they're always thinking about, they're practically always thinking about sex and food. Yes? And the male monkey just finds his turf, finds his territory, whether it's a tree or whatever. And if there's a lot of fruits, he's a wealthy monkey. And he and his wives and his children are eating. And because he's protecting, he's defending that an area, he's really considering, I am the proprietor. And it happens all the time. Another monkey sees that the fruits on your tree are better than mine. And he comes to take it. And there is so much conflict. So much conflict. The same little friends when they were children that were just jumping together and embracing together and helping take, you know, insects off each other's bodies. Now, they are competitors. And you come near my tree, or you come near my group of trees, and the monkey just looks with such violent hatred, just stares at the other monkey and shows his teeth and makes the most hideous possible noise. And the other monkey looks at him and just makes a pose as I'm about to jump on you and gouge your eyes out and eat your nose off. I'm going to destroy you. And he looks with such hatred in his eyes and shows his teeth. And they're looking at each other and they come closer to each other. And just by their expressions, ghastly, violent expressions, and by their teeth, and by the noises that they're emitting, they're really trying to psychologically defeat their opponent through fear. That's what it's all about, fear. They really play on that principle of fear. And I've seen even little monkeys who just don't really have strong bodies at all compared to their opponent. If they can just make that hissing sound and look totally fearless, like, I'm going to destroy you if you don't get out of my place. Or the other one is thinking, I'm taking over, get out. Or you go near my wife, you're dead. Who says it's your wife? This is the jungle, this is the forest, it is mine. Hare Krishna. Might is right. So yes, the beginning of the battle in the forest, before they get influenced by human society, the beginning of the battle is they just hiss at each other and make threatening expressions on their faces and glance at each other. And usually, just by doing that, one of them becomes so afraid they run away. Usually the biggest, most muscular monkey is the one that just scares the other one away. But they have charisma. They have a lot of charisma, these monkeys. And if somehow or other they're both not willing to retreat, then they start making gestures, like I'm just about to jump on you, about to jump on you, and just start half of a leap. And usually that's enough for one monkey to just run away. But if that doesn't work, then they're just, for minutes,
They're just terrorizing each other psychologically, trying to defeat the person through fear. And sometimes I've seen one of them will actually just scratch the other one. And the other one, he means it. He runs away. But if that doesn't work, one scratches, the other scratches, and then they go through a full-scale war. It's battle. They're just rolling all over each other. They're biting each other. They're making each other bleed. They're scratching each other. And they just keep, and they're screaming all the way along. And the females, they don't care. Whoever wins is going to protect them. They're much more peaceful, actually. Men will be men. Let them go through whatever they do, but I'll have my protector. Of course. In other words, the females, they just want to be protected, that's all. They don't really care who, they just want to be protected. Whoever wins will protect me, for sure. This is the way monkeys are. And then one of them wins, and the other is just sometimes bloody, sometimes just defeated, and just runs away and tries again somewhere else. So yes, where does this all come from? The basic principle of material bondage is this sex desire. And none of those older monkeys looked happy. They were always in anxiety. They were always in fear of some other monkey coming to try to take what they have. Always in fear. And always fighting, always defending. Does that sound like business? Yes? Does that sound like what business is like? Whatever you have, there's always somebody trying to take it from you, and you always have to defend. You always have to be alert. And they're really alert to protect whatever they have somehow or other through their hard work and fighting they've somehow or other acquired. The whole psychological thing. And I'll tell you, there is so much false ego of prestige amongst those monkeys. It's such a prestige issue of what you have and who you have. And I'm more powerful than you. I'm more intelligent than you. Yes. It's just the naked truth about human civilization and then in the conditioned state. Now, I was telling you just a few things amongst the many that I learned from these monkeys. But here, Shukadeva Goswami, he's a completely pure self-realized soul explaining what human life is about in the conditioned state from the point of view of the monkeys in the forest. He's telling it exactly as it is. Just like monkeys are jumping from branch to branch to try to find enjoyment, in the same way, the spirit soul is going from body to body to body to body trying to find enjoyment. And just as the monkey is ultimately captured by the hunter, I didn't get to see any hunters capturing monkeys. But Shukadeva Goswami, he saw it. He's telling it what he has seen. Just as the monkey is ultimately captured by the hunter and is unable to get out of captivity, the conditioned soul being captivated by momentary sex pleasure becomes attached to different types of bodies and is engaged in family life. Maya, in this sense, is the hunter.
And that momentary pleasure that comes through sex is her net to catch you. Just like the spider makes a web. And that web is really beautiful from the point of view of a fly. It may not look so beautiful to us as human beings, but for a fly, you know, they're just flying around all over the place. But here's this web that's just so soft and so white, so nice. Let me relax. Let me enjoy. But the web catches. The net of the hunter always has something in it to attract. Yes? For those who are fishers, fishermen or fisher ladies, they don't just put a hook in the water. They put the most attractive type of food that the fish could like on the hook. Yes? If you want to catch really good fish, you have to put the type of bait that that fish likes the best on the hook. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, how do you catch male elephants, the hunter? The hunter is very expert at catching. You have a female elephant. Because otherwise, in those days, they didn't have those big elephant guns that put them to sleep or kill them. No. How does a simple hunter, you shoot an arrow at an elephant, he just looks at you and stomps you in the ground till you're dead. It's not easy catching an elephant with a bow and arrow for a regular old hunter. So they have to use their intelligence. Female elephant. Dig a big hole. And when he comes by the female, he rubs her and she just pushes. He goes, oh, how nice. And falls in the hole. And he's trapped. So hunters know how to catch their prey. The deer likes to hear sweet music. So the hunter plays a flute. And brings the deer closer, closer, then catches. The moth likes fire. The moth likes that bright light. Comes close and is burnt. That's how Maya works. She attracts us. And then she attracts and then captures. And in human society, we're speaking about capturing our consciousness. By putting us in illusion. There are webs. There are networks. Everywhere. But the basic principle. Pungshastriya maituni bhavametam. Is sex. Gross. Affects the subtle body also. Subtle sex. Profit. Adoration. And distinction. We're trapped by our desire for adoration and distinction. We're trapped by the gross impulses for pleasure. Yes. Just as the hunter is very expert at providing something very sensually stimulating to draw the monkey into the net. That phone was making this whole seat vibrate. But he wrote. In the same way, Maya Devi allures us by the objects of the senses, gross and subtle, and when we become attracted, and we don't have the discrimination to actually differentiate between what is favorable for devotional service and what is unfavorable, we're captured, we're caught. as the monkey is ultimately captured by the hunter, is unable to get out of captivity. Once you give in, once you try to taste the bait on the hook, you can't get the hook out. It's there. Very difficult. Very, very difficult. Once you run for that object of the senses and you're caught in the net, very, very difficult to ever get out. Daivi heshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya mamevam ye prapadyante mayameta dharantite. These three modes of material nature are compared to ropes. To the degree we're attracted to the objects of the senses, to that degree we come under the bondage of those ropes. And once we're bound up, it's very, very difficult to get out. Krishna says, unless you surrender to me, it is not possible. Krishna releases you. Sarva dharman puritvyaja mame kam sharanam. If you surrender to me, Krishna says, I will protect you. I will deliver you from all your sinful reactions. And what is sin? Sin is trying to enjoy separate from God. That's all. It's as simple as that. The basic principle of sin is trying to enjoy separate from God. And Krishna says, if you surrender to me, I will deliver you from all your sinful reactions, from your captivity. The conditioned soul, being captivated by momentary sex pleasure, becomes attached to different types of bodies and is encaged in family life. In this sense, like the monkey who has his unsophisticated lack of diplomacy, really what monkey life is really about is simply family life. It's just a very plain version of family life. Instead of having a nice house with a yard in front, they just go from tree to tree. They have their children, and they're trying to maintain. They have their prestige issues. They have their defenses. So in a similar way, Sukadev Goswami explains, just for this momentary pleasure, so many implications and complications come about. And who is a person who is not captured by Maya? A person who's not attached to that momentary pleasure. That's all. So simple. If there were such a monkey, he would be the happiest monkey on earth. If he was just detached from that whole thing, which just develops into so many implications and complications. All that pressure, I have to impress to keep them faithful, to keep them giving me the emotional and physical pleasures I need, I have to keep impressing them. And then to try to impress somebody, there's so much opposition, so many challenges, so many frustrations. Yes? Very difficult. But you're free of Maya if you're just detached. Prabhupada made it one clear, very clear in a lecture. He said, liberation means simply one thing, no sex desire. No subtle or gross sex desire. If that's your state, you're liberated from material existence. But as long as we're in bondage. We are in the captivity of the hunter of Maya. Now, civilization is people who are intelligent enough to know that I am trapped in the net of Maya and I want out. But in Kali Yuga, people are not willing to admit that they're entrapped. They're thinking, I'm the controller.
I'm the proprietor. I'm the enjoyer. Haribo.
There's nothing to get out of. Rather, they're working so hard to get more deeply entrenched in the trap that they're in. Because they just don't get it, that I'm trapped. They're trying to increase their attachments. They're trying to increase the facilities and the pleasures that keep them attached. That is monkey civilization. Atato Brahmajityasa. Human life is meant to understand I am entangled, I am engrossed, I am entrapped. The hunter has me as captivity. And I want to get out. Therefore, we take to spiritual life to get out. But not artha, kama, dhamma, and moksha. If we really want to get out, we want to free the soul from the clutches of bondage. And therefore, we take shelter of the Lord and the association of devotees. And we follow regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. These things keep us very tightly bound, karmically, emotionally, psychologically. And we accept the positive alternative of taking shelter of the Lord by hearing His glories, by chanting His glories, by serving Him. But basic principle is detachment. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach three things. Knowledge of what is this material world? Who am I? The nature of the soul and our relationship with God. This is knowledge. Why am I bound to suffering and how to get out? This is knowledge. The second principle is vairagya, detachment. Detachment from all of those allurements that the hunter of Maya is putting before us. Detachment means I know this is going to feel good. Either to my ego or to my senses, I know it's going to feel good, but I know the result. Shreyas and Prayas, we look into the future. If I do this, I will be trapped. If I bite this bait, the hook is going to go deep in my heart and I'm going to suffer. I'm going to lose my freedom. It's a trap. Therefore, detachment is exercising knowledge in our life by saying no. Saying no to the allurements, the traps of Maya. And Bhakti Yoga, that's the third principle, the positive alternative. It's not that we just nati, just not this. This will cause me bondage. I'll lose my freedom. This will implicate me more in the laws of nature. This will more aggravate the modes of nature to implicate in me and imprison me. We must understand and think that way. But the positive alternative, we must engage our mind, engage our senses in the nine processes of devotional service. That's eternal freedom. Sravanam kirtanam smaranabandana padasevana dasyare pujana sakijana atmanibedana. These nine processes of devotional service, Prahlad Maharaj explains, can free one from material illusion forever and bring one to the eternal shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Parikshit Maharaj was eternally free from the clutches of Maya simply by perfecting the process of hearing. Shukadev Goswami achieved the ultimate perfection simply by kirtanam, by speaking the glories of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj attained the ultimate perfection simply by remembering the Lord. Prithu Maharaj by worshipping the Lord. Hanumanji, he achieved the ultimate perfection of life through service, by carrying out the order of the Lord. Lakshmi Devi achieved perfection simply by personally serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Arjuna, by being the friend of the Lord. Bali Maharaj, by surrendering everything to the Lord. This is bhakti. But in order for bhakti to be real, there must be detachment. Rupa Goswami says, reject whatever is unfavorable for devotional service and accept what is favorable for devotional service. To reject what is unfavorable is detachment. To accept what is favorable is bhakti. In order to understand the difference, vidya, knowledge, is required. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada gave us these books and said these books are to distribute, but they are primarily for devotees to read and study, so that we have a proper grasp of what is to be done and what is not to be done. Otherwise, sophisticated monkeys. The difference between the asphalt jungles of the cities of this world and the vegetated jungles or the forest of this world is just different styles of monkeys. In consciousness, when a human being adopts the mentality of monkey, creates massive danger to the world. Yes? Human life is so precious. It's so evolved. It's meant for self-realization. It's meant to know God and love God. When we use this human discrimination, this human intellect to be like monkeys, what's the difference? I can tell you the difference. In the Himalayan jungles, the monkeys were showing their teeth to each other on different sides of the tree. Yes? It was like their line of control. You cross this line, I'm gonna scratch your eyes out. I'm gonna bite your neck. I'm gonna beat you with my paws. Hare Krishna. Really heavy. They're doing like that. I'm sorry. My propensities are coming out. That's all. Now humans, when we have this monkey mentality, now we're building nuclear bombs. If you come across my line, isn't this what all the nations of the world are doing now? This nuclear armaments. It's mostly to fear their neighbors. Yes? To create terror. I have this bomb. I have this missile that I can send to any of your cities and just with nuclear warheads. Yeah. Very difficult. On the business level, either you surrender to me, or because I'm bigger than you, I'll buy you out. Either you sell to me, or I'll destroy you. I'll crush you. Yes? Bigger companies just destroy little companies. Simply on the sheer brutal force of more money and power. Yes? Little family-owned business are crushed by these big national and international corporations. Why? Simply because bigger monkeys with bigger teeth and sharper claws. That's all. That's what it's all about. I'm going to take over your territory, and I'm going to take over whatever you've accomplished because I'm bigger than you.
and all this fighting over and all this mentality over love. Yeah, it's just sophisticated monkey life. All these songs, what are they called? Guzzles? What is it? I've never heard one, but I've heard of them. And what is the difference? In the West, there's so many different types of music that are just singing about the longing for this momentary experience, the longing for this relationship. But with the monkeys, it's just clear and plain. We just put all of our human emotions into it, and it becomes very implicated and complicated. We become so unbelievably attached to the whole thing. Because a human being is meant to be totally attached to God. Monkeys aren't really, they're attached. But if somebody takes one, they'll just find another one. It doesn't really matter. But humans, the heart is broken. Monkeys don't sing the blues like humans do. You know, okay, I fight for it. I've been humiliated. Go on with my life. I'll find another. But humans, how will I live? Yes, broken hearts. Monkeys don't have such broken hearts. Because a human's heart is meant to give itself totally to God. So you start giving yourself emotionally totally to someone else, except Krishna, and it could cause tremendous pain. But basically, what are we singing about in this world? Nice, fanciful instruments, tremendous amount of expertise. Art, it's called art. It is a form of art. But the mentality is the monkey. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Yes. Now we're trying to defend whatever we have with our intellectual ability to intimidate people, with our economic power to crush people, with our military power to destroy civilizations. And according to Shukadeva Goswami, all it is just a bunch of monkeys. That's all. Sukadev Goswami, if he were to see the United States and America and Russia pointing nuclear bombs at each other during the Cold War, China, Pakistan, Indian politicians just pointing their nuclear warheads at one another, keep building them up, saying that because I'm going to cause so much fear in you, you're not going to attack me. It's exactly the strategic mentality of the monkeys in the forest. There is no difference whatsoever. The monkey justifies it, we justify it. What's going on in the cities of this world? It's just the asphalt jungle of monkeys. It's very sad. Everyone's trapped. Every one of these monkeys is just trapped in the hunter's web. But Krishna is so merciful. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuta nama dharmatna. Krishna tells that I come to this world again and again and again for all these human monkeys to release you from the trap that you've fallen into. Srila Prabhupada came to the West and came back to India. Just to enlighten us. Get out of this trap. Come out of your monkey-like mentality. Sometimes people from the West come to India and they see sadhus just living under a tree, eating very simple, wearing just some copan, and they think, oh, Aborigines, uncivilized. Yes, they have their BMWs and they have their beautiful wardrobes of silken garments, and they have their beautiful houses with air conditioning and all kinds of appliances, facilities to enjoy. And they have all sorts of, you know, sophisticated social dealings, economic dealings, domestic dealings. And they think, what are these? Look at them, just wearing some copan, hardly shaving properly. Huh? But the sadhu is looking at them as just nothing but sophisticated, pitiable monkeys. Huh? It's doing the same thing the monkeys are doing. Same mentality. Just with many frills and ornaments. But simple living, high thinking. That's what human life is for. Simplify our life from all these implications and complications. How? Through knowledge, detachment, and devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya was asked by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, of the 9 processes of devotional service, which is most important? Lord Chaitanya explained, in this age of Kali, Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatiranyata. The quickest way to be out of this monkey descendant mentality is to chant the names of Lord Hari. Hare Krishna. I tried to keep to the subject of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Is there any questions?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, thank you very much for explaining this wonderful point today. As we understood from the nectar of instruction, that the root cause of having uncontrolled sex desire is through the tongue. And many times I find myself, my lifestyle as far as eating is concerned is much more opulent now than when it was when I was a devotee. The type of food that we eat as devotees. So as a sadhaka, what is the standard as far as simple food, or as you said, simple living, high thinking, but many a times we find ourselves not really simple in our eating. So is there any particular standard for a sadhaka to follow? As far as their eating habit is concerned, so that the whole line is simple. It begins with the tongue, Maharaj. So,
because if we are eating Krishna's prasad, there is tremendous progress. Krishna tells in Gita, if we do not eat food that is offered and sacrificed to the Lord, it is very karmically binding. We're eating sin. But if we eat food that is offered in sacrifice, we're eating the Lord's mercy. So just by taking prasad, whatever, whether it's opulent prasad or simple prasad, is a tremendous step of progress from eating bhoga. Yes? From a spiritual point of view.
Now, ideally, in taking prasad, we should take the type of prasad that makes our body, mind, and our body and mind most efficient and effective for devotional service. If we eat different types of people, could eat different things. Bhima, he needed a lot of opulent prasad to do his service. Yes? Bhimasena, he wouldn't be happy just with khichdi every day. He wouldn't be able to function mentally or physically. So he had a lot of prasad. He was brikodar. He had very strong appetite. So if your appetite is very strong, then you could eat a lot. If your appetite is not, if your digestive is not so strong, you should take little. As far as the particular types of foods you eat, we should eat foods that do not unnecessarily agitate our minds and that keeps our bodies fit for our devotional service. Krishna tells in Gita, this path is not for one who eats too much or eats too little. Not for one who sleeps too much or sleeps too little. If you need 6 or 7 hours rest because of your health condition, you must take it. If you can be full of vigor and vitality with 4 hours rest, then why should you waste time with more? So according to the particular person, we have to just analyze what is best for my devotional service. In Mathura, there are the Chobe Brahmins. We have seen they can drink liters of ghee. At one time, they'll just sit and just drink a liter of ghee without anything else. That's like their appetizer. Then they'll begin the meal. Now, for them to do it, it's not a problem. They can digest it, and they can go back to their pujas immediately. But for you or me to take a liter of ghee, I don't know how much service we'd be able to do that day. Yes? So really the discerning factor is what type of prasad best facilitates my devotional service. Does that answer your question? Yes, Govinda Prabhu.
Extension of the same question, Maharaj. But that maturity we don't have. We always justify towards the other side. So, as a conditioned soul, as a neophyte devotee, is that there is a clear path where we are supposed to do, or just try to mature and decide and justify doing sense gratification? That's how we end up. We end up doing sense gratification rather than becoming more mature.
We should be honest. We should be honest. If a person takes very simple food, but the person is mentally very agitated, always thinking about something else, it might be better to take some of something else as prasad. Yes? Srila Prabhupada, his diet was basically dal, rice, chapatis, sabji. It's very nice. And on Sundays, nice feast. Balance. That was Prabhupada's basic diet for most all devotees. Sunday nice feast, because we do have those tendencies of the tongue, and the rest of the time, chapatis, rice, sabji, dal. But he said it should be prepared first class. It should taste very nice, but it should be simple, so it's good for the health and it doesn't agitate the senses so much. Prabhupada always wanted devotees to have first class prasad. Simple, but first class. It was very satisfying, very good for us. And then on Sunday's feast, and festival's feast. But then for the feast, as we make spiritual progress, at the beginning of ISKCON Sunday feast, as you have heard, the only service that anyone could do after a Sunday feast is to attend the board meeting, which means to lay on the boards, to be meeting each other, laying on the boards of the floor. But then as devotees started becoming a little more advanced, then they would not overeat so much. Overeating is not good for your health. Overeating is not good for your service. You take what's good. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would sometimes just take a handful of rice. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, just honor and taste what Krishna is having. Yes? It's a matter of mentality. Some devotees, they could take the opulent prasad, but they're taking not huge quantities, but they're taking just to honor the wonderful remnants that Krishna has eaten. And that way, even some opulent prasad sometimes, you're honoring what the devotees have offered with love and devotion to Krishna, what Krishna is giving back to you. So if your mentality, if your consciousness is nice, you can take those opulent prasads from time to time in a pure divine state of consciousness, tasting Krishna. Yes? Or you can go to Govinda's restaurant just to evaluate the quality of the pizza and ice cream, just to make sure it's up to standards. Does that answer your question? But is that your mentality? Very well. So everything is based on our consciousness. Yes, Mahaprabhu.
Maharaj, how to judge that while we are chanting, we are not developing weeds, though we may be thinking, I am chanting my round, but weeds are also coming out. So how to control weeds?
Rupa Goswami received this lesson from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag Dham. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained exactly the characteristics of the weeds. We have to be honest and evaluate our motivations and our heart. The weeds of desire for fruitive activities, the weeds of desires for profit, adoration, distinction. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually made it very simple. He gave one formula that will protect us from all weeds when we chant. Trinadapi sunichena taror iva sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we're really trying to be humble, tolerant, offer all respect to others and not expect respect for oneself, and follow the regulative principles nicely, if we're just doing those things very carefully and attentively, no weeds will grow. The bhakti lata beach will grow and flourish within our hearts. Because if you study all the various weeds that Lord Chaitanya describes, they could all be overcome by just applying these four principles. Humility, tolerance, devoid of false prestige, and offering respect to others. Therefore, Mahaprabhu said, wear this verse on the string of the holy name always. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.